This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Finding a way to make sure that you teach somebody else what it means to be resilient in order to go ahead and overcome those things and be a productive member of society. We do that. We're going to be steady as she goes. We're going to be living up to the reputation that Americans have, and we can potentially make a better place for everyone else.
Let's go.
Welcome to Citizen. We got a really special guest today, former SEAC, that is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Ramon Colon Lopez, CZ for short. Thank you for coming.
Thanks, brother.
Appreciate it.
Good to be here.
So we were talking about the premise of the show, and it's something that, you know, as a leader, a lifelong leader of people, right, in some of the highest levels of operations and government, you're, you know, uniquely familiar with. But before we get into all that stuff, tell me about how you got into, like, your upbringing a little bit, where you're born, where you grew up. Tell me about your parents, and then what made you decide to join the U.S. military?
Yeah, so my story is, I guess, is one of the textbook, come from nothing, decide to go ahead and take control of your life and do something not only for yourself, but for others. But I was born and raised in Puerto Rico, southwest corner of the island, a place called Guanica. Grew up fairly poor. My parents were both blue collar, mildly educated. My father did a short stint in the Army. My mother at the time was a substitute teacher. And at the age of 13, jobs dried up on the island. Mm. We decided to just sell everything and move to Bridgeport, Connecticut. You know, my parents previously had lived in New York City in Queens, so they went back to a place where they were familiar with.
That's a big culture shift from where in Puerto Rico do you live?
So Guanica is a small coastal town on the southwest corner.
Southwest, so like south of Rincon, 2 hours, give or take?
Yeah,
like
so
that?
South of Rincon, you're probably looking at about an hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
You know,
yeah.
Down south. Best surf break in Puerto Rico, by
the way. Yeah, it's kind of like there's a little mini rainforest down there too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, so actually, yeah, you have on the other side, on the east side of the island, you have the big rain forest, El Yunque. Mm. And very, very diverse ecosystem mm-hmm. out there. But yeah. Shocking to say the least, you know, going from summer year round to, you know, very harsh winters up in Bridgeport. So we ended up settling in Bridgeport, you know, went to high school there and was given several opportunities that I took advantage of. Mm-hmm. One of them, you know, being able to be put in a Catholic school mm-hmm. By a priest paying for my tuition mm-hmm. as long as I maintain a certain GPA. And then going to college and realizing that I wasn't doing much in college, and I decided to join the service to get some discipline and structure in my life.
Okay.
So that was the precursor of me joining the military.
And how? Like, so you joined the military, were you 18 or 19, 20?
I was 19 years
19,
of
okay.
age. Yeah.
And you went into what career field?
I was a transportation specialist, okay. man. I was the person that shipped your household goods.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And how long did you do that?
Well, I did that for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. I almost got kicked out of the Air Force.
Oh, shit. What happened?
Being a wild ass.
Well,
and, you know, just, yeah. you know, basically too much energy, ended up getting into a fight and, you know, Article 15 mm-hmm. almost, you know, lost a stripe. And
well, I mean, if you're not, if college isn't stimulating you, a logistics job probably isn't going to stimulate you either, frankly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but you see, that was part of it. And it was the fact that I was having a mismatch in what I should be doing in life. I wasn't really satisfied with what I was doing, and I didn't really have a clear, defined purpose. And I don't think transportation was it for me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting how even in your adult life, when you make changes, when you're doing the right thing, or you're with the right people, or specifically with the right person, like your partner in life, your wife or spouse or whoever, things do just seem to get a little easier and fall into place. And it's because you're not trying to ice skate uphill.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's just like, that's how life works. So it's a delicate balance between finding hard things to do to challenge yourself and not being an idiot and just butting your head up against the wall doing what is clearly the wrong thing over and over, right? So a lot of it is culture and personality match. Like if I'm, there are leaf eaters and there are carnivores, and you are very clearly a carnivore, right?
Oh, yeah. Meat eater all the way, man.
Keep that a little closer.
Yeah, meat eater all the way. Yeah. And
so what happened after? You got in a little trouble, you're in transpo, and then you make some other decisions, right?
Well, it was at that time where I was once again struggling to figure out, man, is this really the place for me then? So college didn't work. The military clearly is not working. What is it that I need? And by chance, once again, I got to meet a PJ that ended up asking me if I ever thought about going into special operations. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a clue what that was all about.
What year was this?
This is 1993.
Okay. So Mogadishu is going on. Yeah. AFSOC community is actively involved in an engagement down there.
Yeah, and, you know, to my surprise, because I didn't know anything about the career field, I grabbed that Airman magazine that had the story of Gothic Serpent with Scotty Fales and Tim Wilkinson and Jeff Bray.
Yep.
And I read that story, and I was just like, I think this is a place where I can find that purpose.
I mean, that's a crazy story. You watch the movie, read the book by Jim Bowden, or watch the movie Black Hawk Down or whatever, and you can see those guys on what is an active crash site, but also an active gunfight with a giant fucking saw trying to get their dudes out of that aircraft and get them out of there. It's like, man, I remember our PAO. We had one PAO who we would be in gunfights and this motherfucker's running around, no weapon, with a camera. I'm like, we might be crazy, but you're out of your fucking mind, dude. You know what I mean? So this, like, I mentioned that because AFSOC is unique for U.S. Special Operations in that it isn't direct action most of the time. Mm-hmm. It's like you're doing other stuff while gunfights are going on and bombs are dropping and shit like that. It's a different kind of person to be able to do that shit, frankly.
Well, yeah, and it's a lot of critical thinking, to be honest with you.
Under extreme stress, too.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, like for example, you know, in that the Battle of Mogadishu, those guys were basically what we call making chicken soup out of chicken shit.
Yeah.
They were just basically, we'll figure it out right now and we'll be able to get this boys out of here. But so that was a motivating factor at a time where a lot of people told me that I wasn't going to make it through the program. The program at the time was having, on average, about a 90% washout rate. Basically, 90% of the people that came into the program didn't make it through. And I was about 145, 50 pounds wet. And I wasn't the archetypical, you know, Johnny Football hero to go in there and say, hey, here I come to save the day. But, man, went through the pipeline. And as I went through that rigorous training, that's when I started figuring out my purpose and things started making sense. And taking life serious.
What do you think it was? Was it the seriousness of purpose of the career field that did it for you? You know what I mean? What do you think it was that made that switch flip for you, I guess?
The fact that I was taking ownership of my actions, I was driving the outcomes, and I wasn't letting anybody tell me that I couldn't do something that they were not willing to do themselves.
So a lot of this, I just talked to somebody about this morning. For me in the 82nd, you can't be, if you're a gunfighter, you can't be afraid to die because you'll never do anything. You'll be paralyzed with fear all the time. But the one thing that I think is common amongst a bunch of guys, I don't know if fear is the right word for it, but the thing that keeps me up at night is failing the men around me, right? Like I can, and I think that you carry that into your full adult life with your families. Like you don't want to let your family down either. I think that's a much bigger motivator than fear or anger will ever be, right? Because it's rooted in something positive, love. Like you love these people, you want to protect them, right? That's what men do, biologically speaking. That's why we are the way we are, is to protect shit. So I wonder if it wasn't, like part of it is that fuck you attitude. Like you're not going to tell me I can't do something, right? Yeah. But now the stakes aren't, well, this dude's housing stuff isn't going to get to him on time. The stakes are relatively low there, right? Like you're going to give somebody a bad day on this new job. You fuck up and somebody dies, right? I mean, it's quite a bit different. I think when you raise the stakes in your life, that's when you really start to discover what your real purpose is.
Well, and I think the other variable is the fact that you know that everybody that is surrounding you has gone through the same freaking crucible to get to where they are. So that creates an even stronger bond. But going back to your comment of, you know, this is what, you know, men do. We're protectors, whether it's our family, you know. There's a big sense of that. And when you look at the motto, pararescue, that others may live. I mean, it defines it. And yeah, so that's what actually clicked. It's like, you pay your dues, you did something that very few people can do, and now you're surrounded by people that are willing to sacrifice equally in order to go ahead and achieve the same outcome. Right. So,
and it's all like, we talk about in the military, we talk about selfless service a lot, and there's opportunities in combat for that all the time, no matter what your job is. But your that particular career field is defined by that, right? Mm-hmm. Like as an infantryman, my job is to close with and destroy the enemy in close quarters, right? That's my job. Your job is to rescue people. It's right in the name. It's right there in the title, right? So it's like, I think for me, it's quite a bit more of a dynamic situation. Now, we get into those situations where our buddies are fucked up and we go help them out, get them out of bad situation, or even civilians or whatever the, whatever is going on. But it's not a primary focus all the time. Yeah. Like we're, I wonder if your career field isn't more like what it's like to be a cop. You know what I mean? Where it isn't, you have to be aggressive most of the time. You have to at least be ready to be aggressive all the time. But it isn't always about the violence. You know what I mean? Most of the time, it's about awareness in a lot of ways, right? Yeah. And it's just a much more complicated job than what I did, mentally speaking.
Well, mentally speaking, you're absolutely right. Because, I mean, in the military, I always tell people that it's fairly easy. You know, we get our marching orders, we're going to execute the mission, and then we debrief just to make sure that we didn't miss anything. At the same time that that dynamic is taking place, the pararescue man is sitting back, all right, so these are the potential things that can go wrong. And if that shit happens, this is what I need to do in order to make that work. And this is what I need to make that work. And what happens if I don't have that? Then I have to go ahead and make sure that I look at the environment around me to see what else I can do to go ahead and create the best possible outcome for whatever injury takes place downrange. So it's always critical thinking, but that's the way that the animal is bred. You know, from the beginning in the pipeline all the way up to the final two, you know, it takes 2 years to create a pararescue man. At the end of the 2 years, that is ingrained in your head that you have to be thinking through things. You have to be thinking of the worst possible outcome and be able to react to it.
Well, how do you think that affected you? Because you're the way you describe yourself younger and this, I mean, obviously very immature, right? But motivated, but immature. Like it's, I think it's, that's common, especially during the global war on terror is interesting because in the 82nd, most of the E5s are like 22 years old, right?
Yeah.
They're children, they're knuckleheads, right? That are running around in charge of other dudes and millions of dollars worth of equipment in very serious situations, but perform admirably. You know what I mean? It makes you grow up. But I wonder like how that transition period from your early 20s to your mid 20s like changed you as a person, like how when you met your wife and started to have a family and shit, like how did that map onto your normal life? Because I think a lot of dudes see themselves as two people. I'm the warrior and I'm the family guy, but I don't think those are two different things. You know what I mean? I think the motivations for that, the certainly the execution is different, but the motivation and core principle of those things are exactly the same to me.
And I mentioned the things that you learn in the pipeline, right? So one of the very first tasks that you get as a pararescue trainee is to memorize the pararescue man's code. And that code is, it is my duty as a pararescue man to save lives and aid the injured. I will be prepared at all times to perform my assigned duties quickly and efficiently, placing these duties before personal desires and comforts. These things we do that others may live. Now, when you look at that code, it is a roadmap for what your life should be. And to me, there was not a line between the warrior and the husband. I needed to apply the same amount of effort in order to go ahead and be successful in marriage and in combat. Right. Sometimes I came up short on the family side because, you know, 20 years of fighting can create a lot of problems and a lot of issues. But to the greatest extent, man, that was my script for life. It was that code because I believed in it because it changed my life.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reason we have these ethos, you know, to organize your life around. And it's why I'm not religious, but it's why people are drawn towards religion. Here's a here's some examples of what it means to be a good human being, right? Be a good man, be a good woman, whatever it is. Okay, fine, I can do that. Like we must, as leaders, communicate very specifically what we expect out of people. Setting expectations is really important. You know what I mean? It's like task, condition, standard. That's why we do it that way. But things have gotten a lot more fluid these days, right? It's like we're questioning what reality is, things like that. It's bizarre. We live in the dumbest period in human history, I think.
I agree with you.
It's like we have all the information possible. And the best example, other than the social stuff, is probably just diet. Like, we know all that bullshit that the government said in the 50s about eating grain and low fat and all that bullshit was completely wrong. But people are still doing it now, right? Yeah. They still eat garbage food and they walk around feeling like shit all the time. They can't figure out why. Heart disease is still the number one killer in America for no fucking reason other than our own stupidity, right? It drives me crazy. It drives me absolutely insane. And even in the middle, you go into a chow hall sometimes, you're like, what the fuck is this? This should not even be available here. You got like boxed juice and fucking donuts, like, what is it? Otis Spunkmeyer fucking muffins and shit. Get that out of here. Yeah, that's processed nasty bullshit.
Still there, man, on the menu.
How is that possible? Well, why is that possible?
Well, and that is part of the problem, right? To where we institute things, and because we attach a budget to it, then we must always do it for the long run because this is what we got. But I will tell you that the food in our military chow halls is probably the worst.
Mm. And why don't we have a career field that grows food for us on the fucking base or something like that, right?
We're working on that. We're working on that to revolutionize the way that we feed the machine.
Mm. Because logistics win wars, right? Exactly. I believe Patton said that. Am I right about that? I think it was Patton that said that. Soldiers win battles, logistics win wars,
yes.
I believe.
And but if you look at the amount of money that we spend on weapon systems, you know, take the F-22 and the F-35 as an example. The tail end of that thing to the helmet, you know, an obscene amount. But we're always falling short on how we take care of the human weapon system. Mm. And a lot of that is the fuel that goes into that system, and we need to do better by our people. And when you look at the problems that society is having with obesity and disease, and the fact that we don't have enough able young men and women to come into service because of that, man, we need to go ahead and change the habits from the beginning.
77% of 16 to 19-year-olds are ineligible for military service because of their physical condition.
Yeah, it was actually 19 to 26 years of age.
19 to 26, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
It's still in the high 70%.
That's what the fuck?
It's mind-boggling.
But even when you get in, let's say you're marginal, you're on the borderline, but you're good enough to get in, you get in, your lifestyle isn't changing enough to make you elite, right? If you're going into the fucking chow, and if you're an E1 to E3, maybe even an E4. It's not like you're going out and buying your own food because you don't have any money. You know what I mean? You're making like $1,600 a month. So you have to eat that stuff. So you're saying there's at least some discussion about growing our own food.
Not discussion. There's action.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what it is?
So right now, you know, the way that society is, so a lot of our youth, you know, the technological age, you know, they're very introverted. You know, they're not the social. They don't like to go out to the rec center and hang out with their buddies. They like to be in their rooms. And that's part of the problem, because they will go ahead and get that crap from the chow hall, bring it to the room, and then eat that and eat their game and play their video games.
This episode is also brought to you by BlackRifleCoffee.com, the best coffee in the world. As a matter of fact, they won both the gold and bronze medal at the Golden Bean Awards this year for their exclusive coffee club entries in the elite category. So the best coffee on earth literally was Circus Bear by Black Rifle, one of their ECS. So I recommend that you go sign up for the Black Rifle Coffee Club. Use the code CITIZEN. You're going to get those points off. And, you know, you get all the benefits for being in the coffee club. You get the free shipping. You get access to all the partner deals. You get access to the exclusive coffee club. You get access to any new products that come out before anybody else does. You know, it's a very large club that they have over there, and the coffees are premium. Every single one of them is good. You're going to get experience for you. You can do just the plain coffee club, and if you want your two bags of espresso or your two bags of silencer smooth or whatever it is you drink, you can get those two bags or one bag or whatever you want every month, or and or rather, you can use the ECS, the Exclusive Coffee Club, and get access to some of the most premium coffees on the planet and kind of learn what it is that you like. You know what I mean? So then you can order those premium coffees from Black Rifle as well. So, and we all know they got the best branding, the best merch, and they're buddies. You know, we're all friends here. We love Black Rifle. So go to blackriflecoffee.com, sign up for the coffee club, or buy something, do whatever you want. Use the code CITIZEN, you're going to get those points off.
What we're looking at doing is, number one, changing the supply chain system of the type of quality of food that goes into those chow halls. Mm. Number two, make it accessible for people to where you have a satellite kitchen, just like they do at the airports right now, to where you can pick certain healthy choices in there, and it's right there in the barracks, to where you just walk down, and man, you order it, and then it comes in, and then you go ahead and eat it. And then the other thing is the fuel rations as well. What else can we be doing with the technology that we have today to have things that are worthy of human consumption?
Right. Stuff that's freeze-dried instead of preserved, for example, is a really good. So the difference is, at its peak freshness, you freeze dry something, it can be rehydrated and eaten without any kind of detriment to the body. Yeah. Whereas you add preservatives and fake sugars and things like that, and it fucks your body up.
Yeah.
It doesn't even take that long. In a couple of years of sustained exposure to that, your body chemistry changes. Your body loses the ability to process sugar correctly, for example, which creates type 2 diabetes downstream.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's like all these things that we know for a fact.
These cancers and everything else.
Yeah. Which is, luckily we have 107 Foundation. Chelsea's out there
getting everybody squared away. Same, man.
Yeah, but like, she is a crazy person. Luckily she's getting people squared away, but she can't, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure here, right?
Absolutely.
We've got to do better about this stuff. And I like, even having a career field that is like a farmer or some shit, like you grow food or have chickens so we can have real eggs instead of weird powdered eggs in a bag or whatever the fuck that shit is. I don't know what it is, to be honest.
It's fucking horrible.
Yeah, it's gross. It's definitely gross. I just don't know what exactly is in there. I think I want to snatch one and send it off to a lab and see what's actually in there.
And you'll be afraid what you find. So there's a very, very strong initiative to be able to do that. And while I was a SEAC in the seat, you know, and I took this over from my predecessor, John Wayne Troxell. There's an initiative called Total Force Fitness, and nutrition is a big part of it. So I, as a retiree right now, I'm putting a lot of effort into getting that right, because we need to go ahead and set up our future generation for success on the battlefield, and to make sure that we have able bodies to be able to go ahead and do what the nation needs them to do.
Yeah, so we do these panels here every year, me and Tim Kennedy and a couple other people. Veteran suicide panels, right? And it's a big one of the points that I always like to make is that we have, because I think that the vet suicide issue has been mishandled, like very badly, not just mishandled, but misunderstood to a great degree. We have a software problem and we have a hardware problem, right? We have 21-year-olds on average in America now have the same level of testosterone that a 65-year-old had in 2000 because of plastics, heavy metals, whatever the fuck it is, right? And then we have traumatic brain injury. We have all these hardware issues that need to get solved. But we only focus on the software issue. Well, we're going to send you to therapy. You're going to go to therapy for a while. Maybe they'll give you some pills for the hardware stuff, but we're not actually going to do any kind of holistic treatment on that to make it okay. We're just going to treat it. We're not going to fix it. But you can fix it. You can fix those problems, right? Mm-hmm. Those physiological problems. And at no point during the GWAT has there been a concerted effort from the government to fix that problem. There have been lone voices in the wilderness, like, can we please fix this shit, right? But it's never been policy to like, hey, and I was talking to General Donahue about this a couple months ago, like every male in the Army or in the military should get their testosterone levels checked right now, not just whether they've deployed or not, because the fastest growing contingent of active suicides are people who have never deployed before, right? That's not great. 30% of all active duty suicides are people who have never even seen combat. So you can't just say it's because of combat stress. It's not. It's something else. There's more to it than just that. So get people tested for that. See what their brain chemistry is like. We can fix these issues. They're fixable now. And it doesn't cost that much money. These, like, testosterone and peptides, it's less than like $200 a month to treat that issue for one person. That's not very much money, right? And then there's the software issue, which is like making people mentally resilient, giving them the tools to before they even get to combat. Like you were talking about the weapon system and stuff, and then the human weapon. We would never let our primary weapon, our service weapon, be in the condition that we send our soldiers out into combat in, ever, right? And we damn sure wouldn't put them on the rack like that when we got home.
Yeah.
But that's what we do with people.
Yeah, and that's back to my point to where we have neglected that weapon system. Hmm. And, you know, another thing that I was doing while I was a SEAC is bringing that same awareness to where, you know, it's the definition of insanity, thinking that we're going to keep looking at the same grass and everything else and just admire the problem instead of doing something about it. We need to do
well. We come
a lot
up with
more.
Checklists, right?
Yeah.
We come up with checklists. Let's do these things. Then we check those boxes and we move on with our day.
We need to do a lot more. And one vignette that I typically brought up when I was actually advocating for Total Force Fitness was the medical system. And this is no bust to the military medical system. You know, they're overtasked. You know, they're basically, they have been gutted and they're doing their best that they can to go ahead and make ends. But, you know, like a young man goes to the clinic nowadays with knee pain, what do they do? They just go ahead and make him sit in a room and give him Motrin.
Yeah.
You know, they don't look to see what the hell the problem is or anything else. In the ideal world, if we were really to put our money where our mouth is in taking care of the weapon system, the clinician will actually look at the injury and say, okay, let's go ahead and take a look what happened. All right, so you twisted it. Let's go ahead and look at your body composition. Mm-hmm. You're about 30 pounds overweight.
Right.
Why are you overweight? Let's check your cortisol levels.
Right.
What's the stress in your life? Yeah. And then you start making the problem harder to better understand it. That's how you get to the software problem when it comes to the mental resiliency and also to the hardware problem, what is really going on in the body.
Right.
But that's where we need to get to when it comes to the human weapon system. We do that, a lot of things are going to fall into place because people are going to understand their problems, and they're not going to be like, nobody can help me,
right.
Which that sign of despair is one of the biggest drivers for people to off themselves.
The biggest, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's like, I've been talking about this specifically a lot lately, when everything seems to be going okay, but you still feel hopeless and miserable.
Yeah.
That's when people kill themselves, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, there's no light at the end of this tunnel. Fuck this, right?
Yeah, that's
like, and that's a normal... Like, it sucks, but that is not normal, but that's a reasonable way to react to that situation. If you if you truly feel hopeless, you're going to behave that way, right?
Well, and I'll turn it up even one more notch. I mean, you recall when we had this big issue with a lot of our elected officials complaining about, you know, the military being too tough on our recruits in basic training, and the Air Force even going to some cards, time out, you know, you can cry in the freaking... day room if you want to. I'm just like, there's no room for that shit. You know, this young men and women, we are training them right now to do what 99% of the peers chose not to do, and that is to go into foreign lands to kick somebody's ass. You know, and even if they're administrative in nature, even if they work at the chow, guess what? They're still going to have to go forward. And chances are that the enemy is going to reach out even in the places where they actually work. So that mental resiliency is really what we need to go ahead and we need to be tougher with them and not softer.
Well, you know, Machiavelli said, if you are kind when you're supposed to be cruel, you'll be forced to be cruel when you're supposed to be kind.
Absolutely.
Right.
And you've seen the meme, you know, hard times, you know, hard men, you know, create good times and everything else. I mean, there's a lot of truth to that. But we don't need everybody to be like that. We just need a certain group of
1% of people who actually serve in the military, maybe they should be like that, right?
Well, yeah, they need to be like that.
Or the 0.45 that deploy, right?
But the problem with the world that we live in is that everybody's trying to find a reason to make everybody the same, which is bullshit.
Yeah.
Man, everybody's got a different duty. You don't try to make a fireman the same as a police officer, the same as a doctor.
Well, if everything was the same, I wouldn't want to go travel. Like, I like traveling to Italy, for example. If it was the same as Austin, why the fuck would I ever go there?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You would just eat the same gruel every day. Everything just gets sanitized and all the culture and interesting parts of life get removed.
Yeah.
And we're talking about social and culturally, but this is very pragmatic. We have to win when we fight. Otherwise, our country doesn't exist anymore, right? Like, this is a literal existential issue that we're facing.
Well, and the other thing is that our youth right now is getting so accustomed to this catering mindset to where, you know, there's no need to be tough. You know, if I can just get by, somebody's going to bail me out of this. And man, you know, we are going down a very dangerous path to not having a decent warrior class to be able to fight the future wars of this nation. And people got to realize that, you know, freedom hinges upon the actions of those young men and women going forward and going ahead and going against an enemy that is determined to go ahead and reverse that.
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, we're in pretty dire straits right now. And I hear people talking about it. Definitely, you and Troxel, a lot of people, former like senior level military commanders, are talking about it. But then there's a lot of people that are still in the military, still in politics, who are saying the opposite of that. Like, we need to make the military more inclusive, for example. Now, I think the idea of representation and inclusivity certainly has its place. And you brought up an example of it the other day. We're recording Wednesday the 23rd. We're 150 years to the day after the first female doctor got her medical degree in the United States, right? Can you tell that story?
Yeah, so you're talking about Elizabeth Blackwell. So here's an immigrant. So there's a good story here and how our society is also being bred to just go ahead and embrace the doom and gloom of things and not the good things that come out of it. So an English immigrant that comes to the United States, she had a lot of motivation to go ahead and take care of people. One of her good friends, another female, is on her dying bed, and she's still on her dying bed, and she's the one taking care of her. And as her friend is dying, she tells Elizabeth, "You know, I wish you would have been my doctor because you understand what I'm going through. Male doctors don't." And there's a lot of truth to that, because male cannot really relate to a lot of the problems that females face. So that was the motivating factor for Elizabeth to go to medical school. But the institution wasn't going to let her because she was a woman, and women had no business being doctors. So she fought it. And then when she finally got accepted into medical school, when they put it up for a vote for her admission, the males that were voting thought it was a joke. So they all voted yes. And eventually she became a doctor. And after she became a doctor, she ended up getting other females to become doctors, which created one of the biggest medical schools in New York City. Mm. And now when you look at the current state of affairs, there's about 50% of our doctors are female.
Right.
That is a good example of why diversity matters, because there are certain people that can understand things better than others.
Yeah.
And not all of us are the same. And then the other thing.
By the way, not to interrupt, but you can map that onto the first iteration of U.S. Special Forces. They were primarily European immigrants, right?
Yes.
That spoke the language and understood the culture and understood the topography over there, right? That was the first Special Forces operators were all fucking not American. I mean, they were naturalized citizens, right?
Well, yeah, that's yet another problem with our society, is that we're so ahistorical to where we think that every problem is new. Where, man, we can go back 150 years and find a good example of why this matters.
Well, every like 100 years, we rediscover the Stoics. Like, have you heard of this Marcus Aurelius guy? Like, yeah, motherfucker. Yeah, I've heard of him, yeah. It's like one of the brightest minds in human history, and we just forget he exists every 50 years.
Yeah, because we get complacent, right? And, you know, people tend to take a 5-second soundbite or a headline, and they're making that their shorthand for critical thinking, which basically, you talked about the dumbest period of our society. It's because we're getting intellectually lazy. Mm-hmm. We don't like to get into the details or the history to better understand what is really going on.
Well, that's why I like that. That's why I think podcasts have been a really big part of this Overton window shifting back to normal a little bit, because people are starting to have, you know, we only do an hour and a half typically on our shows, but some of these guys are doing like multi-episode, like Sean Ryan, Joe Rogan, they're doing like 3-hour episodes, really getting in to the subject matter so people can, you know, it's hard. We're used to debates. Like, let's say presidential or congressional debates or something, where people are like, you ask a question.
Shit shows nowadays.
Yeah, it's a shit show.
Character experience.
Yeah, it's nonsense, right? They're just caricature responses. They're it's like a drop down menu. Well, if they ask about taxes, I say this, right? Yeah. But now you're forced to actually explain why you think what you think, which is good, because it's like showing work in math class. The reason your math teacher made you show your work in math classes so they could identify where you fucked up and then teach you how to correct that, right? Mm-hmm. So if somebody tells you exactly why they think what they think, you can then go, yeah, but this part isn't correct. So if you change that, and you don't have to be a dick about it, if you change this little part right here, now how does it work out? Like, do the problem again, but change this part to make it correct and see if you come to the same conclusion. Maybe you will, probably won't, right? Like, now your worldview is starting to change. Now you're living in a rational world again, which we are, you know, we're slipping away from that. It's very bizarre to me.
Well, everybody's getting accustomed to what I like to call the first date dynamic. Now, any woman that you try to date will go ahead and put on the best face they can, the best outfit and everything else, just to impress you, to go ahead and get you to buy into what they're selling, right? And it goes the same for guys when they're trying to go ahead and romance women. But the problem is if that is not who you really are, it becomes harder with time for you to sustain that persona. And eventually somebody's going to get sick of them. You know, but people nowadays, they try to pretend that they're smart for the moment that they have your attention in order to bid for a position that eventually is going to have lasting effects on the decisions that they make on your behalf. And when you call them out, what is the first thing that people tend to do?
Well,
they cancel you.
They
cancel you. Well, you know, you're just not inclusive, or they throw some other bullshit buzzword. But getting to the root cause of problems, and for people to have rational conversations, to have a debate that actually is driven by facts, point, counterpoint, and to have the public seeing that dynamic taking place because you really believe in what you're saying to them, and you really understand what the problem is, and you really have a good grasp or an idea on how you're going to fix it. I think that that's when we start becoming a better society. Not this flash in the pan, well, oh yeah, you don't like the way I think about taxes, where you suck because you're a criminal. That's the way that things go nowadays. And I cannot even watch political debates anymore because, man, it's like the Jerry Springer show.
It's so stupid.
I mean, they're not really answering anything that the American public is really interested in. If we're having a problem with our economy, how about we talk about the solutions to the problem? If we're having a problem with healthcare, how about we talk about the issue for what it is, instead of like, well, you know, you voted for this 15 years ago. Nobody gives a shit about that, man. We want to move on to the future.
Right.
And we need people that are actually worthy of public service to our society.
Well, the problem is people that desire power very rarely deserve it. And people who deserve power very rarely desire it, right? It's like a problem. I think that's always been the case in human civilization. So, you know, a lot of this is about, it is my belief that the stronger the individual is, the stronger the group is, right? I think that's, and that isn't, I learned that lesson in the military, right?
We come from that tribe.
But I believe that it is true in all facets of life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I also think when the individual is most empowered, society is most free, right? Because everybody is now playing by big boy rules. We don't have to worry about, we don't have to cater to the lowest common denominator anymore, because we're now self-policing ourselves and the people around us, both by our example and by holding other people accountable, right? That is when you reach a critical mass of everybody, it's like tug of war, pulling on the rope in the same direction, then things go well. That's just how it works, right? And when everybody takes their hand off the rope and puts their hand out waiting for something, then everything falls apart. You know what I mean? And that's the stage we've been in for some time now. Now, it does speak to the resiliency of our country that it hasn't completely fallen apart, frankly. Like, I don't want to be all doom and gloom. It's impressive to me how fucked our leadership is and how we're still afloat, frankly. I think it's impressive that the average ordinary citizen is still carrying on like this. But there's a tipping point that we will reach if we don't course correct, where we're going to fall off the edge of a cliff here. You know what I mean? Empires die. It happens, right? No, and we're not immune to it any more than anybody else might be. So, you know, I wonder from your perspective, well, let's get into the meat and potatoes here then. The military command recently, right, including the new the Air Force guy that took over as the Joint Chief, right? The first thing he said when he took over is that we need more diversity in the force, right? I don't know what he meant by that necessarily. Maybe he means it in a good way, but I feel like that's a weird thing to say coming out of the gate, considering all the weird shit that's been going on in the military the last couple of years.
Well, you know, I've known General C.K. Brown for years. I served with him in the height of the fight against ISIS, and he's a warfighter. And whenever he talks about diversity, it's the way that he's always thought about empowering the people around him. When he talks about diversity, he's not talking about black or white. He's talking about diversity of thought because he values that. Okay. He's the one that will open the door for anybody that has an opinion on a subject. He provides that opportunity for them to add value to it. But that is really what he means to it. But a lot of people, you know, it's almost like, you know, certain words that actually spike your attention.
Mm-hmm.
Woke, you know, diversity, you know, all of these other things that actually like have this negative connotation to them tend to tip us like, man, is he talking about this, you know, this poster of, you know, we're going to have mediocre people just because they look different. They're going to be part of it.
Right.
No, that's not the way he looks at it. And I know that for a fact because I know the man himself. And there's a lot of people like him in the service that are, you know, looking for that meritocracy approach to diversity and inclusion. We need to find the talent in different places, not in the same place where we found it yesterday.
Yeah, you don't want to limit your talent. You wouldn't do that anywhere else, right? You wouldn't limit your talent.
You wouldn't do that. But there's also people within that decision-making process that do embrace the other side of it. And they're more concerned about the flash in the pan. This is how I'm going to fix this so I can go ahead and pat my resume and move on.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And you have to be really, really wary of those people.
Yeah, it's really weird to me that the Navy has a chief diversity officer. That's weird as fuck to be honest. And this guy, I don't know if you know him or not, but he is a DEI guy, which is, DEI is insane. It is the cancer for a meritocracy. Now, the military has to be the ultimate meritocracy because the stakes are life or death, quite literally. That's not hyperbole. The stakes are life or death. So I know people react harshly to the word diversity, to inclusive, whatever the fuck like that. If it is a person like what you're talking about with the chairman who is trying to broaden the talent pool as much as possible, that has to be something that people can, that can, one, be articulated to people clearly, and two, that people, even though they're anti-DEI or whatever the fuck, you have to accept that because that's the right answer. The right, like if you had the opportunity to interview 100 people or you had the opportunity to interview 1,000 people and you had the ability to do both, you have to fucking interview 1,000 to get the best person, right? That's how fucking math works. It's statistical. So, you know, don't let your, I was talking to BJ Baldwin about this morning, actually. Just because you don't agree with somebody's solution to something doesn't mean there isn't a problem, if that makes sense to you, right?
It makes perfect sense.
So like when people were saying all the anti-cop shit in 2020, 2021, everybody just wanted to say back the blue and whatever the fuck else. And like, all right, cool. I support cops, good cops that do good shit. But is there a problem in policing? Sure, they're not trained well enough. They don't have the funding or the time to get trained well enough. We are gunfighters, right? Like I don't even know how many rounds I've shot in my life. The reason we're good at it is repetition. Yeah. But repetition and then exposure to stress during that repetition. So we go out into a gunfight and we look like we're better at it and faster at it than we should be. What are you, a crazy person? You don't know, you're not afraid? No, I've just done this a bunch. It's literally all it is repetition. You give those cops the repetition and shit, then they can become better at their jobs, right? If you defund them, they get worse at their jobs.
Yeah.
That's fucking stupid, right? So, yes, I agree that their solution to it is stupid, but any reasonable person would agree that cops are undertrained, I think, right? So there's just because you don't agree with that person's solution doesn't mean there isn't a legitimate problem going on there.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, the pool of people eligible, because, you know, when you look at first responders, that's the same pool of people that we're competing with for military service, because they need to be able bodies to be able to respond to crisis. But, you know, the problem with most people nowadays is that, again, going back to the cancellation point, you know, we're going to stop it until you get it right. Who's going to do the work if you stop something? You do not defund an organization for the actions of a few. Hell, let's defund, you know, Congress or Senate right now.
Because I would love to.
Well, I mean, so, but I mean, it's the logic. And I'm not saying that we should, because then the government still needs to work. Look what happens when we have a government shutdown. We have been basically the recipients of that ass pain every year on their continuing resolutions. But we need to have an actionable body that is able to go ahead and continue with progress. And we don't like, we don't need to like every action that takes place, as long as we have continuous progress. It is when we become stagnant or when we regress that I really have a problem with certain people doing things. Now, you mentioned diversity, equity, and inclusion officials in certain organizations. I have seen some get it right, and I have seen some get it grossly wrong. And people tend, if you look, there was an organization here recently that I actually provided advice to when it came to diversity and inclusion. And they were talking about, it's like, well, you know, we don't have enough females. We don't have enough, you know, blacks. We don't have. And I'm like, well, does that matter? I mean, so I turned to the CEO and I asked the CEO, it's like, all right, so whose company is this? It's like, it's your company, right? Who drives the mission statement and the success of that? It's your vision and your mission statement, because you own it. Now, are you going to hire people that look different and fail at that just to say that you're inclusive? Or are you going to go ahead and have the best talent possible to realize those goals that you have? And if you do have the best talent possible, does it matter whether they're male, female, of color, or whatnot? No, it does not, as long as your mission gets fulfilled.
Sure.
That's what Meritocracy is all about. I brought this up over here because when I was having the diversity and inclusion, I want you to take a look at this as we're doing that. But I mapped it out. I mapped it out for people because, man, you know, there's cultural issues, there's an ethos, you know, there's character issues that come along to it, there's opportunity. And it's not that simple as saying, well, we have females now that are fulfilling positions of responsibility. The question is, were they the best person for the position at the time based on the competition? So we cannot afford to get that wrong, because that is actually going to dilute the quality of the organization. And it's eventually potentially going to go ahead and set somebody up for failure.
Right.
And it's going to, the most dangerous thing, what happens when you put mediocre people that high, they're high in ambition and low in potential, is that you rob somebody else the opportunity to go ahead and prove their worth.
Well, I mean, you're fucking two people over, really, because you're putting them in a, you're setting them up to fail, and you're not even giving the other person the opportunity, right?
Well, and then the entire organization
struggles, right?
Yeah.
And if you map that on to the military, it's a big deal, life or death. If you map it on to our entire culture, our entire society, then we experience societal decay. It's like, well, you shouldn't be surprised by that, right?
Yeah, and you shouldn't. But it all goes back to, it doesn't matter what the poster looks like, as long as you have the best of the best for what you needed them to do.
Yeah, I mean, it might just be the case that there are more of a certain group of people who like doing a thing and are motivated to do it and are good at it than another, right? I mean, there's nothing intrinsically wrong about that. As a matter of fact, in Northern Europe, in the Netherlands, Sweden, places like this, that have the most access, I guess, to they are the most egalitarian of societies on Earth. So there are no glass ceilings for women, people of color, things like that. It just doesn't exist there. They have higher rates of participation by gender and gender-specific jobs than anywhere in the world. So in Northern Europe, right, in Scandinavia, I guess, 88% of nurses are women, where the rate is much lower here, right?
Yeah.
Much lower here, where, you know, we spend all this time talking about diversity, inclusion, and shit, but when people have the opportunity to self-select into things, they choose the things that make the most sense for them, right? Which is why I always say, and I said it earlier, when the individual is the most empowered, you get the best results, because people will choose the things that they like doing and are good at. People naturally choose the things they're good at to do, right?
Yeah.
So let them fucking do it. Why are we taking a guy like, hey, you know, you're really good at this thing. I'm going to put you over here and let you do this now. But, you know, because we need diversity. That's fucking stupid.
Yeah. And it, well, it's got to be a passion, you know, and surprisingly. So I retired 3 November, right? And a lot of people come up to me and say, hey, so how are you liking retirement life? And I was just like, well, I mean, it's cool. Mm. Well, you know, is it less stressful than what you used to do? And I have to say, you know, that for my entire military career, the reason that I hung around for 33 years is because I was following my passion. Mm. I enjoy what I was doing. Was it hard? Yeah. But that didn't mean that I was miserable doing it. I never stuck anywhere where I was miserable. Mm-hmm. I always look for another avenue to be able to go ahead and fulfill, you know, my needs as a human being and to be worthy of somebody's, you know, of somebody's time and effort. But, you know, it goes the same, you know, for people to be able to find their passion. And if you have too many females doing this or too many males doing that, I don't think it matters. I think what matters the most is, do they love doing what they do? And were they given the opportunities in order to go ahead and rise to the occasion? Because
right.
I think that is one of the most underlooked factors on diversity and inclusion. And it is not anyone's fault, but it's something that a lot of people can take action on. Yeah. And that is creating opportunities in places in America right now to where those young men and women don't know any better because they're surrounded by people that are just like them.
Right.
And they don't know that there's a way out. They don't know. A kid in the ghetto in Bridgeport right now doesn't know that he has the potential to become an astronaut. Yep. A little girl in freaking some rural town in Alabama doesn't know that she has the ability to become a doctor if she's given the right opportunities.
Yeah, in that vein, I would highly recommend reading Colin Powell's biography, right? Good example of this. Especially even when he was down at Fort Benning, they wouldn't let him eat at the fast food places in town because he was black, right?
Yep.
It's like, okay. But this dude still served his country. These people in internment camps during World War II, Japanese people left the internment camp to go serve their country in war and shit like that. Like people, there's an old saying by a guy named an English author called G.K. Chesterton. He said that men didn't love Rome because she was great. Rome was great because men loved her. Right.
Yeah.
That's like people with that kind of motivation. It doesn't matter what you put in front of them. They're going to charge through it and they're going to do the right thing for their country or their family or whatever it is. You have to put people in the positions that they're going to be most successful. And you know what you would never, ever hear somebody say is, you know what we need to do is grow more lettuce and corn in the desert. Why aren't there more farms in the desert? Like, because they don't fucking grow there, dumb. You know what I mean? Like, you would never even think to say that. But we say that about people.
Yeah.
You know, and there's practical ways we wouldn't say it about people either. We wouldn't say there's not enough 5'4" Chinese dudes in the NBA. So we've got to do something about that. That's fucking stupid, right? Like, we would never even think to say something like that. So you, like, maybe that's reductive to some degree, but you do have to apply that same logic to people. People choose, like, some people are naturally suited to do certain things, but then, you know, based on their upbringing or their interests, they get into a position where, like yourself, for example, there are a lot of dudes I know who work in, like, as pack clerks and truck drivers, all kinds of jobs in the military, right? And they are perfectly happy doing it. They like it. They like serving their country. And there are some people like yourself and myself, if we were in a job like that, we would be in the brig at some point. We're going to jail or getting kicked out, right? It's one of those two things. So why not let that process play out to some degree?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like nature is, I say this to people all the time, your brain is a lot better at being a brain than you are at thinking, right? And nature is a lot better at figuring out where shit should go than we are. It just is, because it's been doing it for a long time, and it does it dispassionately. Yeah. It doesn't have feelings to get hurt. It just, the right thing happens, right?
Definitely. And, you know, if you let the cards play out and you at least make people aware of the options that are available to them, man, it's for them to choose.
Right.
You know, but you don't have to force things on people. Mm. I mean, they eventually are going to do whatever they want to do. But at the end of the day, you know, you cannot be bitching, moaning, and complaining just because you didn't do the work to get to where you needed to be.
But so here's one problem I really have. We spend a lot of time these days talking shit about the next generation, right? Gen Y, Gen Z, whatever the fuck they are. I don't know what they are anymore. We spend a lot of time like, oh, they're lazy. They're not motivated. They're whatever this, like, okay, well, we made them. Yeah. We made those people. They're our children. They're our fucking... We did that, right? So what level of responsibility are we going to take? And you could see that as doom and gloom, maybe. But the good news is whenever you look, drill down into a problem and you find out that you're responsible for it, you should always see that as good news. Because now you can fucking fix it. Like, yeah. It is in your power to fix that now. And it's in our power to fix it. Our education system needs a complete overhaul. The fact that we're, you know, not teaching kids life skills, we're not teaching them resilience. Mm-hmm. If we're gonna teach them foreign languages, it should be from ages like 6 to 12 and not from fucking 14 to 18. Do you like this? I can't ask you guys this question because you spoke languages before, but for some fucking cracker ass dude in South Carolina that doesn't know any foreign languages, trying to learn a foreign language at 14 in high school, it ain't happening, dude. Nobody remembers a goddamn thing they learned in high school, language wise. But if you start in first grade, that kid will learn that language.
Military couples do it all the time they live abroad. I mean, we have, you know, kids.
That's why half the fucking agency back in the day was all kids that grew up overseas.
Yeah, with the Army, I mean, they learn it. They're sponges, man. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I never ill speak of, you know, this generation. Just because at one point, you know, I had some old sergeant major that was like, yeah, you guys nowadays, you know, back in my day, man, it is life. It's what happens. We change. We evolve. But the one thing that I know about the current generation that is 70 is that they're capable. They're trainable. And they're smart as fuck, man. They are smart. They have all that information. Mm-hmm. We just need to unleash them to do what they need to do.
Yeah. We need to get them in outside, right? Yeah. Use those. So... they have learned the Socratic method, how to problem solve on these devices. Mm-hmm. We just need to get them into the woods and let them figure out how to do it there too. It's not going to be very difficult to do this, by the way, because they already have the skill set. You just have to translate a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. So like, you know how to do X, Y, and Z on your machine here. Let's go out and do it. Let's go learn how to start a fire, right? Or whatever the fuck. Mm-hmm. Like these are practical skills that you learn. And again, something I was talking about this earlier this morning, there's a lot of new research out now that shows physical roughhousing with your kids at a young age makes them more confident and resilient later in life for whatever reason. There's a lot of reasons. One is low-level conflict resolution, so they don't have a generalized anxiety about conflict. They make eye contact with people that shake hands, yes sir, no ma'am, shit like that. They're not like, okay, yeah, I'll do that. And just staring into the device the whole time. They're not walking around like ostriches with their heads buried in the sand. And then they don't fear low-level violence anymore, right? Which is part of life. You bump into people in a crowd, and you're like, oh, now I got to fight this guy? Like, no, you can just keep walking, asshole, you know? Just the ability to manage cortisol specifically. The one thing that separates... tier one and tier two operators away from everybody else, even in the military, but everybody else, generally speaking, in society, is their ability to burn cortisol at a much higher rate. This is a quantifiable fact now. If you take the average super athletic gym rat from off the street who's never been in the military, and then you take, let's say, a first group sniper, right? Mm-hmm. That first group sniper is going to burn cortisol at a 30 to 40% higher rate than that dude who's in perfect physical condition, right? So it isn't just about being in shape. It's about your mind being in that shape too. Okay, so and that sets you up for success in life.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is just an example, and this is just probably, you know, one generation back. When I was a commandant of the PJ school, I could tell who had been in a fight and who had never been in a fight, right? So when we did combatives, you know, I will call two people to come forward.
Like an Oklahoma drill in football, right?
Basically, yeah. So what I will do is, like, I want you guys to pay attention to what's going to happen here. I will go ahead and slap the first guy. And if they actually went like this, I was just like, you see, that just created an opportunity to get their ass kicked. Mm. Now, somebody else that had a fight, when you smack them, they're going to square right back. It's like, oh, wait a second. What are you doing? This is where I need you guys to be.
Right.
Because this is going to be your life from now on. Mm. So you can teach that to people.
Sure.
I mean, and that is not assault. That is training.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And if you start, the earlier you start, the less force it requires to teach that lesson.
Yeah.
Right? So we are doing, like, if you love your country, and I'm fucking serious about this. I'm not trying to be a dick or anything. If you love your country, you want to create strong, resilient children. I'm not telling you to hit your kids, obviously, but fucking go take them to wrestling. put them in jiu-jitsu, but like take them to WWE, literally. Take them home and body slam them on the fucking bed and shit like that when they're 3 years old. You know what I mean? Like it builds that from a very low level. So when they get to basic training or when they get out into the real world and they go to college or get a job or start a business and things go wrong one day, they don't have a fucking meltdown. They're just like, oh, that went wrong.
Yeah. Well, and for us, it was like my school growing up in Puerto Rico. And I was getting
in fights. They don't fuck around down there.
No. I was getting in fights probably, you know, 2-3 times a week. You know, and, you know, from a young age, you know, you're accustomed to where men, you have a difference, you duke it out. And you went to the plaza and you freaking knocked it out.
Sure, yeah.
And then when the authorities came, you just kind of like dispersed, you know.
Yeah.
But, man, it taught you quite a bit about life and the fact that, hey, look, if you cave in when somebody actually becomes overly aggressive towards you, even though you have a better point of view than they have, you're going to lose.
Right.
And you can't afford to do that.
No, might makes right is not good. No. Right. Because it isn't always the strongest person with the best idea.
No.
Which is why, you know, community matters too. And again, I'll bring it back to this. The stronger that individual is at the lowest possible level, the stronger we all are. Think of it as links in a chain or however you want to, you know, do the metaphor. But it is a universal truth that that's the way it is.
It is. It is. You know, it's collaboration, it is teamwork, and it is a common understanding of the greater good.
Yeah. So you, like, after all of the negativity from DEI, and I think most of it comes from the critical race theory stuff that pisses people off, but diversity, inclusion, especially like you said, of thought, you're tackling a problem in Western culture and to some degree through your consulting in corporate America that is like, okay, you're close. You've got the right general idea, but your execution's fucked up. You're doing it wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Your idea's okay. Here's how to do it correctly. I think that takes a lot of balls to do that, to be honest, because a lot of people watching this who would hear like, oh, CZ's out doing fucking DEI presentations to people. What the fuck? Thought he was a good guy. You know what I mean? Or something like that. Yeah. It's like, yeah, but you got to drill down and listen to what he's actually fucking saying, man.
No, yeah,
he's giving people an organizational structure to make good decisions in their hiring practices.
Well, and again, a lot of the training doesn't mean promotion of some of the stupid stuff that is going on out there.
Right.
Training means helping people understand the true value of it.
Mm.
And we talked of Elizabeth Blackwell. That is a perfect example of why diversity works when it's right, because you're unleashing the power of somebody to be able to do that. And I put that in front of you so that you better understand where I'm coming from when it comes to this diversity and inclusion stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more. It's a complex problem, but it's not about the optic. It's about the value and what people bring to the organization.
Yeah, and think about it, you know, I think a lot of guys who've been in the military will understand this. Some people grew up in places where they didn't go out in the woods a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember, well, actually, some of them did, but I guess like somebody that grew up in a city, right?
Yeah.
That didn't understand what it was like. And then you have some kid from Tennessee that's a private in your unit, like, hey, and he's like, don't worry, I can fix your truck right now, dude, in the fucking barracks parking lot. You don't have to go to the mechanic. You're like, oh shit, okay. This guy's got some unique experience. And yes, in some ways, it's tied to his culture and upbringing where he grew up and maybe his race to some degree. Maybe it's tied to that because of experience and culture and shit, but it isn't because he's white that he knows that. It's because of the experience, right?
Yeah.
So you got to parse that. It's the experience and education and knowledge that matter. And then the motivation as well, right? Does this person actually give a fuck about this? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're pretty good at math. Do you want to come be our math guy? It's like, Einstein didn't like doing math. That wasn't his thing. You know what I mean? He hated it. There's a million quotes about it. Even in his dialogue between him and Oppenheimer, he's like, here's my equation, but I don't want to do any math. You know what I mean? So just because somebody's good at something doesn't necessarily mean you put them in a position that just does that. Like they might be good at it for a reason, and that reason might be something that you can, you know, put them in a position based on, right?
Yeah. And, you know, when you really look at it as a whole, you know, diversity and inclusion is about nothing more than covering the blind spots that we're not even aware that are there. It's not about blindly following somebody's stupid agenda.
Yeah, but the way we've done it is so fucking stupid. We're like, you know what we need to do is we need to get more people of color to opine on this so we're not missing gaps. And what we really get are white liberals canceling people, right? Like, what the fuck? Like, some older white ladies is bitching at me about something. I'm like, you're not the person I need to be talking to right now. Right. Mm-hmm. I need to be talking to this person with unique experience. Why are you telling, why are you speaking on their behalf? Why are you taking their voice away? Right. That's fucked up to me. And it's a thing I think that pisses most people off about it, to be honest, is you're literally like this idea that, you know, a certain political party has been talking about over the last couple of years where black people don't have the ability to get driver's licenses or hire a lawyer to start or start a business or something like that. Oh, these can't do that, so we got to make it easier. Like, no, people are fucking perfectly capable of doing these things. And why would you even say they're not? That's weird that you would say they're not, right?
Well, and so we try to generalize so much to where we lose the essence of the localized problems that we have. So maybe that is the case in some rural place in America.
So I mean, Amish people probably can't get driver's license either. They don't know how.
So why don't we fix the problem for them and teach them?
Yeah.
How to make it
right. If that's indeed the case, right?
Yeah.
It isn't always the case. Sometimes it's, what do they call it? The subtle racism of lower expectations or something like that, I think is a phrase some people use.
I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, it's like, solve the problem. I say this all the time. If you're a limited government person, if you're a libertarian or conservative person, and you genuinely believe in limited government, just because you don't like BLM doesn't mean you can't look at that problem and be like, you know what, that's my country made. And I'm going to, just because you don't like their solution to the problem doesn't mean there isn't one. Like, okay, well, let's go in there and solve that problem so the government doesn't come in and create a bunch of fucking rules we don't like, right? Yeah. That seems like a much better solution than sitting around and waiting for somebody to come solve your problems for you.
Well, and I have met brilliant people of all sorts, and we're not just talking about background, gender, race, religion. I mean, I have met some pretty magnificent people. I have also met a lot of rotten people come from the same those same groups. But we have to have the ability to have the conversation with each group to better understand what is it, where they're coming from.
Sure.
And the first go-to shouldn't be like, well, you're being racist because you're not understanding me. Yeah. That's bullshit.
Yeah, ignorance is not
intentional. You know what really chapped my ass? A couple of things. So as I was growing up and I was, you know, getting promoted in the Air Force, a couple of my peers actually said, it's like, well, you know, we got to fill the quota. You know, we don't have enough Hispanics. Man, I was like, fuck you, man. No.
How must that feel, even in government, for somebody of a certain group to get promoted politically, get an assignment or a posting or assignment or something, or even in corporate world, get a job? It's like, you know, when it's a diversity hire. That cannot feel good for you, right?
Well, no, and it shouldn't feel good for the person, because every single position that I have held, I was extremely proud because I knew the hard work that I put towards it, and I knew my competition.
You don't become the commander of the training squadron or the SEAC because of your fucking race, right?
No, it's capability and it's effort and it's reputation, character. All of these things play into it. And then, you know, another example was when Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force got selected, Joe Bass. You know, this was at the height of the diversity and inclusion stuff. Well, she's getting put in there because she's a female. No, she was the best person for the job at the time.
Right.
And I can speak to that because I was in the middle of all of it. So, but people, you know, they look at the situation and they jump to conclusions just based on what the flavor of the month is for what people are bitching and complaining about. Man, we just got to give the benefit of the doubt in a lot of places. Now, you're going to get to see it. When it's grossly wrong, you'll get to see it and you'll be able to sniff it a mile away.
Like Pete Buttigieg, for example, the worst secretary, the worst cabinet level secretary I think I've ever seen. I'm not trying to get you to opine on this at all, but he's the transportation secretary. And we've had like comical error after error. And the only reason he's in his position is because of demographics, right? I mean, it's pretty clear he was a diversity hire. But then, you know, you see, we were talking about it earlier. One example we see like that, and then it's like fruit of the poison tree. We just think that every posting, every assignment is just nepotism or diversity now. And it's not always true, right? Like, as much as it is, as much as it sucks when somebody gets put into a position like that for bad reasons, it also sucks that we as individuals allow that to poison our minds about everybody else, right? One example is not everything.
No.
We have to stop thinking that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're damaging the meritocracy too when you think that way.
Mm-hmm. You are. And you're robbing people of opportunities, mm-hmm. you know, to a sense to where highly capable people are not even going to apply just because they know that it's going to go a different direction.
Man, isn't
and
that fucking
sad?
And that
is the most dangerous place that we could be.
Mm-hmm.
When we're basically telling talent to screw off because we're going to go in a different direction.
Yeah, and I wonder out of the, if it's 77% of 19 to 26 year olds that are in not capable, I guess, of military service, out of that other 23%, how many people actually even give a fuck about doing it or think it's a good idea to
half
serve the country now,
about
right?
About 13%.
So it's only, we're working with 13% of the country?
Yeah.
Basically? Yeah.
13% to fill the 1%.
And it used to be, what was it, in World War II, now there's a draft, obviously, but most people signed up in lieu of getting drafted because they wanted to choose their service. But I think there were 16 million people that were in the military at the time. Or, I'm sorry, not 16 million people. 16% of the eligible males joined military service in some way or another. Yeah. Now it's like 0.45%.
Yeah,
right?
Well, and so the three quarters of society, I think it's been pretty consistent throughout the ages, you know, because of criminal records and so on. The problem that we have right now is that there's a lot more health-related issues that are impacting. Basically, it's not a matter of choice. It's you can't.
You literally can't.
Yeah, you really, really can't.
What is that 4F, I guess, right?
Well, yeah, and then the other part of it is the propensity to serve. You know, I was at a forum one time. And there was a general officer that actually stated that, you know, in today's environment, I wouldn't let my daughter serve.
I'm hearing that a lot, actually.
Well, so
from and it, that used to be the best recruiting tool was you and I would send our kids to the fucking military.
Exactly.
Pasha would send his kids to the military.
So this flag officer said that in a public forum with a bunch of junior people. So my first inclination was just to shoot her straight in the face right there. But I said, you know what? Take the high road.
Mm.
I pulled her off the stage afterwards, and I said, ma'am, you realize what you just did there?
Mm.
Telling that group of young people that you wouldn't even let your daughter serve? You are a general officer.
Right.
What are you doing about the fucking problem?
Mm.
Instead of saying that, I'm not going to fix it, and I'm not even going to let my kids come into it.
Yeah.
You are part of the problem.
Yeah, I remember my one of my first sergeants, Kenny Johnson. He ended up being working down at the School of the Infantry on his last billet, I think, as a sergeant major. But he told me one time, if you're in an environment where you don't like how things are being run, then you work harder, get yourself into a position of leadership, and then you start making fucking changes.
You make
changes,
the change.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's like anything else is quitting. Frankly, don't fucking black pill. Don't retreat from society and become one of these Sigma males and then pretend like you're the smart guy or like you figured it out or like, oh, I'm the cool one because I'm not even going to play that game. No, you're a fucking pussy.
And don't be a leech.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you have to become a leech at that point, right? Because you're not providing any value to society.
Don't be a leech. I mean, if you're not going to fix the issues, then move out of the way so somebody else will do that.
Yeah. And again, that's harsh language, but the reason I use it is because once you identify that you are part of the problem, then you get, it is now in your power to fix that. That is a gift. It is a gift. A lot of people get put in positions in life where they can't, like a child, for example, they don't have the choice to affect their own circumstance. I grew up in a fucking abusive household. I didn't have any choices there, right? So when I get out, now I try to give other people choices. That's your duty as a fucking human being. Forget about military service. Just baseline human being, that is your duty to take your pain and suffering and turn it into empathy and action for other people, right?
Yes.
That's why we serve. Like it's the impetus, I think, for all mankind, frankly, to do that, male and female. It's just like, that's what we do. You know what I mean? So do it or don't, but don't fucking try to high road anybody. Don't pretend like you're a good person if you're just tending to your own desires, because you're not. You're a piece of shit, frankly.
Well, yeah, and, you know, add value to society, and then don't complain about society when you're not doing your part to go ahead and make it better.
Yep, 100%.
So,
well, look, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you coming today. If there's anything you could leave people with today, you know, what would you have to say just, you know, for people moving forward in American life?
one thing that I would like to say is for everyone to be more accountable about what they can and cannot do. Be respectful of the people that actually have those positions of responsibility that are working hard to go ahead and make things better. And be responsible for your own actions, your home, the people that you own, the upbringing of your children, you know, the values that you institute on them. Because at the end of the day, that is what matters in America. It is the individual that eventually creates an environment, whether it's via influence or by collaboration or membership, that eventually becomes the norm for everybody else. But unfortunately, there's too much negativity out there. There's too much victimhood. And I know that I'll probably get blasted by using the word victimhood because that is taboo right now because people go through hard things. Yeah, I had a hard life myself. You had a hard life. You just said it. But it is a matter of being a victor and actually overcoming those things and not living your life playing that same fiddle and finding a way to make sure that you teach somebody else what it means to be resilient in order to go ahead and overcome those things and be a productive member of society. We do that, we're going to be steady as she goes. We're going to be living up to the reputation that Americans have, and we can potentially make a better place for everyone else.
That's great advice. And again, it's a gift to know that it's actually in your power to do stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you have control your own destiny.
I mean, you can't, that's all you can ask for. Like all you can really control in life is your attitude and your effort. And when the circumstances are such that you can actually use your attitude and effort to directly affect your life and the life of others, that is a gift. And it is immoral to waste that gift, in my opinion. You're letting people down, including yourself even.
Yeah.
Well, look, thanks, sir, for coming today. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah. Appreciate it, brother. And, Really glad that we finally got to do this.
Yeah, it's great. Very great. We'll do it again sometime soon. Maybe drink it, bros, sometimes. I don't know. Getting you and Ross around each other might be your problem because he's going to say some weird shit. we'll do this show again for sure sometime soon. Thank you again for coming.
All right, brother.
Yeah, and thank you all for listening. This has been Citizen.